Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 287, which is like murder, but 100 times worse.
It's like the murder of a police officer.
Is that what 287 is?
I think a 187.
No, 187 is a murder.
That's right. All right. Yeah.
It's what I say about the tangents already.
Has hip hop taught you nothing?
No, it hasn't.
Oh, goodness. So before we get too tangified, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Dan.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And we'll be talking about Wonder Woman this week. And we have a guest on the line. Am I saying it right? Karina?
Karina, like the song. Actually, I'm named after the song.
How about really? That? So Karina Lawson, she is the co-founder of GeekMom.com and a contributor to Barnes & Noble's, what's SFF blog?
Oh, Sci-Fi Fantasy.
Sci-Fi Fantasy blog. Okay, sorry. I should know that. I feel weird for not knowing that.
But minus two nerd points, Tom.
I know. I was like, San Francisco? They have a special? Oh. And then I was like scared to ask what the second F would stand for. So, you also write fiction, correct?
I do. I write, I admit to writing romance novels.
Oh, look at that.
Congratulations.
Good for you. That's awesome.
And you mentioned twins. How many children do you have?
My oldest is 23, my son is 21, and the twins are turning 18 on Friday.
Oh, jeez.
So I am old enough to have seen the original Wonder Woman show on first airing.
Yes. We are of all ages here. So.
All ages.
Yeah, well, not all ages, because that would be infinite.
That would be impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah, with not enough microphones.
But yes. We run the gamut from what?
From old as dirt to Kevin.
Hey, it's called 50.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you wanted to put that out there.
Oh, I totally own that.
I didn't want to out you. So Dan's 50. I'll be 47 in September.
I'm 35.
I'm
30.
And so we kind of run. So
babies.
There's a lot of times when Dan and I have to explain things to Kevin and Joe. Like,
yes, it's true.
Here's what a rotary phone was.
I know what a rotary phone was.
Television used to be black and white.
Right.
Television. True story. I have a rotary phone in my bedroom.
Nice.
Because the kids kept breaking all the portable phones. And they can't break.
Excellent. They don't even know how to use it.
Yeah. Just look at it.
Now, this isn't the kind where you hold the piece up to your ear and then turn the thing, is it?
Oh. <Yeah. laughs> You mean like Green Acres?
Yeah, like the old box on the wall where you hold the horn.
You crank it.
Like on Andy Griffith. Or Green Acres, you're climbing the telephone pole.
Yes.
You have to unplug the toaster so I can use the phone. See, these are the jokes we have to explain to them by explaining to them what Green Acres was.
I know what all that stuff is.
And then when we talk about tangents, next thing you know, I'm explaining to them the rural purge of 1971, and it's just a whole thing.
Yeah.
So I know you're pressed for time, and we want to talk about Wonder Woman, and we're kind of a boys club, and we thought it sounds stupid to have like four dudes sitting around talking about Wonder Woman. So how we normally proceed here is Joe will kind of just take us through the movie, kind of a synopsis, which isn't really the best way to describe it, because synopsises are typically short.
This is not.
This is not what we're going to do. But anyway, so it's just kind of like a book club for movies. So we will let Joe take over and tell us about Wonder Woman.
So obviously, DC has not had the greatest track record.
That's one way to put it.
That's, you know.
Since The Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah. Yes, that is correct.
I saw a friend of mine, Ivan Asquith, who works at Kickstarter, posted a great comment today. He was like, he's like, I never was worried that a female could headline a superhero movie or that a female could direct a superhero movie. I was worried that DC could.
Yeah, that is
right.
It has been. I saw somebody else posted where it's just like, it's ridiculous that this movie had to succeed. Like the quagmire that DC is faced with is that they get to make a male dominated superhero movie and it can fail and they can just do it again,
right?
And there's no repercussions to that whatsoever. And then everybody was like, if this one fails, it's over. And she's just like, I don't understand. Like, this is our first one, and right, if it fails, why can't we just make another one?
Right.
And well, all the women I know were all along the lines of, oh, Wonder Woman, please be good, please be good, please be good.
Yeah. Please be good. A, because it's her first go. B, because it had to. I don't like saying it had to be good, but you can only strike out so many times at the box office as far as Warner Brothers and DC is concerned. So it had to be good on that standpoint. And you have to do the character justice. Like, she is in the Trinity at DC. She's the third point in that Trinity. The other two have had shot after shot after shot.
Oh, I'm sorry. In DC, Trinities have 5 points.
Well, like their tridents. Much like their tridents. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But she's the cornerstone.
And of course, if there was anything lacking in this movie, it was going to be blamed because it's a female character.
Yeah.
Which is a sad state of affairs.
It is absolutely sad. But I mean, it was going to come down to that.
Yeah. So your movie opens up with present day Diana working in London, which I liked. Like, that's always been one of the things that they never really talk about is where she lives, because like, she always just kind of pops up. But in my reading of the books, she's always been kind of centered in London. So she's working as a curator in a Wayne museum. So you get a Wayne Industries truck pulls up.
I don't know. I had friends who said they thought that museum was the Louvre.
Yes.
It looked like the Louvre to me.
It was.
It was in London.
It was the Louvre at the beginning.
Yeah.
So she's in France? Yeah.
That was France.
Okay.
Thought so too. It's like, because I've never been there, but I've seen pictures of the Louvre, and
the glass pyramid there.
I thought, just based on what I learned in grade school, that there would be more women's underpants. Because it's France. I mean, we saw London, we saw France,
but there were no underpants.
That's what we were told.
What?
We're sorry.
Is that not a thing?
That's not okay.
Okay.
So
another childhood myth destroyed.
You haven't hung up yet, because this is what we do.
I will note that Bruce Wayne is awfully paranoid still. I mean, it's one picture.
Yeah, special delivery. Send the guards.
Yeah, we need to have three armed guards, a locked down, you know, briefcase, and
and we also need to make sure that Diana doesn't own a scanner.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
The only thing I could think of, honestly, is just the value of it. I mean, it's from World War One. It's an old picture that was taken with one of those. Yeah. What's the word?
I don't know.
Like, the flash bulbs with the the chemical is.
Camera.
No,
camera.
But you know, like, they used to take pictures. Phosphorus or something like that.
Sure.
So
we're not that old.
Oh, sorry. But
yeah, you guys know what that is.
So, you know, it probably is susceptible to damage, and so I think the preservation of the photo was more than the security. But I get what you know.
Yeah. I'm not. We're not bagging on it.
It was just
wow.
Yeah.
So he's really nice.
Yeah. She opens it up and there's a note that says, you know, I found the original for you, Bruce, or whatever.
Yeah, maybe someday you'll tell me the story.
Oh, that's what it was. Well, yeah. So, and then we get the flashback to Diana as a child on Themyscira, which, if I could, I will take that movie. Like, movie was, like, I'll take young Diana as a little girl on the island. Mm-hmm. I'm good
with
that.
Oh, as a little girl?
Yeah, yeah, because I thought that was adorable. Like, I thought her as the little girl was great.
It was very cute.
If there is not a young Diana costume for this Halloween, I would because that costume is going to show up over and over and over again.
You're talking about, like, the cream-colored one?
Yeah, the little girl.
Yeah.
All the little girls.
Yeah.
They wanted that.
My daughter was Wonder Woman for Halloween this past Halloween, but they'd only released the Batman versus Superman, so the costume that we see. So, and there were hundreds of those. But you're right. If we don't see a young Diana, much like Rey from Star Wars,
right.
Like there were little Reys running around everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, given the way these companies work, it'll probably be like a sexy young Diana.
That's the kind of stuff they always
do. I know. They always kind of muck it up with, you know.
Here's the upside, though, is when they make the sexy Wonder Woman costume, it'll fit your 5-year-old.
That's terrible.
It won't be sexy on her. It'll just be a 5-year-old's costume.
5-year-old's costume. She's also 6.
Sorry.
All right. So before we get into this part, because I want to mention something that was really surprising to me about this whole Themyscira part. And even when it was little Diana and growing up into adulthood. So just a little background. So Joe, you have a daughter who's 6 now.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, you have a young daughter.
Yeah, she'll be 5 in September.
Okay. Tom, you have a stepdaughter.
A stepdaughter who's 10.
So I have a boy who's turning 8. And so I don't have a daughter. So I don't have that connection. It didn't hit me on that level, seeing the young Diana, raising her, that kind of thing. But when we got to Themyscira and just even seeing the Amazons, because Themyscira is all women. Mm-hmm. They're all women that dominate this island. They're fighting. They are fiercely fighting. They are fighting better than we've ever seen any DC character fight in these movies.
Absolutely.
Right? And so it just really felt special to me. And I wanted to bring this up because I did not expect to feel these kind of feelings. But with it being a female director, the first to direct a superhero movie, and a huge budget, and so much writing on this movie, when we got to the island, and it looked amazing, and these women looked amazing doing what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. And Robin Wright, badass.
Robin Wright. And is it Connie Nelson? Who's Hippolyta?
Connie Nelson. Why didn't we have this Robin Wright as Princess Buttercup? Is what I
want. she had a couple moments.
That's a completely different movie at that point.
But yes.
So we got to this moment, and it was just when all the Amazons were fighting when Diana was little. So even before she was really in the picture. And when I saw this, I started feeling emotional, and I didn't expect to feel that way, because going into this movie, I'm not like a huge Wonder Woman fan. I enjoy the character, but I'm a Batman guy. He's my favorite. So I wasn't looking forward to the movie for that reason, just like, oh, Wonder Woman's my girl, you know. And then with the other DC movies, I didn't have high expectations because they didn't meet my criteria.
They also, the tone is so drastically different from the other 3 movies, right? So everybody's moping. There's not a single smile in any of those movies. In this one, you're Gal Gadot, is it Gal Gadot or Gal Gadot?
Gadot.
Yeah. Is able to smile and give you a sense of innocence, bewilderment.
But not naive.
Right. But I mean, like, certainly like the ice cream scene or seeing a baby for the first time.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to cut you off, but this is before we even see her. What I mean is, my point is that when I saw this movie happening, because I try to avoid trailers, but I think I saw the first one, and I've seen, you know, just little clips and pictures pop up over the internet. I've edited some reviews for my site, but I didn't have that high expectations of the movie. But when we got into it and I saw Themyscira and I saw these women, these powerful women battling, and all this was actually happening after 76 years of this character's creation, I felt emotional. And it was weird because I didn't expect that. And
there's another element too. They're all powerful. They're all, for one, they're all being active and doing something and not watching. But two, the way they are filmed showcases their power and not their sexuality. I mean, I'm sure men found that really attractive, but that wasn't the point of showing them.
Yeah, it wasn't.
It wasn't filmed like, ooh, there is it.
Yeah.
I have no idea how
it wasn't filmed like Michael Bay would shoot.
Seeing that.
Yes.
And there's a way to make women look powerful, and because of that, they're sexy rather than, ooh, so sexy.
Right.
I was looking for it.
They have swords.
I was looking.
Sword and arrows. It was great.
Arrows, swords, and they're expert warriors.
And I was looking at the costumes and trying to see how this would be handled. And I figured that because it's a woman director, I didn't think it would be tasteless or anything. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, it's a big hero movie. It's produced by Zack Snyder. I don't know. And what I noticed
was also produced by Deborah Snyder.
Well, I know, but it's,
I hear what you're saying. But like, there's also a woman,
of course,
producer, who probably had maybe a little bit more input than her husband.
But the Amazons, when I saw them, all these powerful, amazing people fighting and training, mm-hmm. but they're fully armored and clothed. There was nothing revealing or provocative about the way they were dressed. So I totally agree with what Karina's saying. It just overall, it was very powerful from the first scene, mm-hmm. even before Diana is introduced, who is an amazing character, and we'll get into the acting. It's fantastic, but I just think that from the get-go, when I saw the island and I saw these women, I was like, they're doing this right. What they've said is true, and, yeah. and it was really neat.
Yeah, so they're going through, Diana's kind of running around the island, and she sees the Amazonian soldiers are training and fighting, and she's standing up on a cliff and mimicking what the soldiers are doing and the warriors are doing.
So cute.
Robin Wright sees her and kind of gives her like a wink and a nod. She's like, yeah, I get it. But Connie Nelson, who plays Hippolyta, who in the comic books is actually the first Wonder Woman, like in the mm-hmm. in the gold, in the
yes, not anymore.
Right, not anymore. In the old Silver Age, she helped form the JSA, which was like,
when I grew up reading comics, she was the Hippolyta, the mother, and then they had Crisis on Infinite Earths, and then she was the first Wonder Woman.
That's right, and she joined
and
Alan
now
Scott.
She's not. So if right. you're as old as me. She wasn't originally, and then she was, and then she wasn't again, which is comics, everybody.
Yeah, right. Just like, we don't like that idea. We'll just do some time travel thing, and it'll wipe it all out. But yeah, she was part mm-hmm. of the, you know, the original Green Lantern and the original Flash. She was kind of part of that group for a while. But in this one, she is not. So Diana kind of lets her know that she wants to train, and Connie Nelson, Hippolyta, is just like, no, that's not going to happen. And they start eluding that there is something special about Diana that nobody knows except for Hippolyta. I also do like that they give you two separate origins for Diana, which are both based out of the comics. The idea that she is formed that Hippolyta couldn't have a daughter. She prayed to the gods. They made her out of clay, and then poof, there she was.
Like a dreidel.
Much like a dreidel, I guess. And then the second...
Well, if you read Gail Simone's run, it was mystical clay.
Right.
That was from Mother Earth. And there's a lot more to it. But yeah, in essence, it was created from a mother's need to have a child.
Correct.
Which I think is a very powerful feminist kind of
It is. Mm-hmm. That the original, her original origin is very feminist driven. And I don't mean that like that's just what she was.
Because I don't know as much of the history of Wonder Woman, and some of the listeners might not as well, they're all Amazons and they're all adults, mm-hmm. and there's no children. How do these Amazons start out? I don't understand the no children thing.
Well, yeah. The comics have handled it different ways, but I'll focus on the movie seem to indicate that Zeus had given the Amazons immortality and Themyscira mm-hmm. in order to protect, well, spoilers later in the movie, and you find out... they're there to protect the God Killer without giving too much away yet.
Well, that's kind of
our
comics,
thing. In the comics, it has been handled slightly different over time. Sometimes Diana is the only child on the island. That was the case with Gail Simone's run, mm-hmm. which she used to showcase how the women who couldn't have children felt, which I thought was a really fascinating take on it. And then Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang, who drew a beautiful Diana.
Which is the run that I...
There was...
That's the run that I love. I love that run. I think that's probably the best.
Yeah, the Amazons, like, basically, you know, had sex with random sailors, killed them all, and sold off the babies, which I couldn't read the Azzarello run after that.
It was difficult, but I think...
That was not the Amazon.
Yeah, so then in his run, we find out that Diana is a demigod. That Hippolyta had a relationship with Zeus, and then that's where Diana came from. So it changed her origin. What I think Azzarello wanted to do with that was tell a mythology story, and he found a way to get everybody the Greek gods into Wonder Woman and do almost a Vertigo style Wonder Woman book that was separate from everything else.
Well, I think his run is a good mythical story, but not necessarily a good Wonder Woman story.
I think that's a fair statement.
Where she is now is Diana was not the only woman on child on the island, and she grew up training with other Amazon daughters.
Yeah, I get it.
And the Amazons have relationships with each other. So, I mean, Greg Ruckus talked about how the Amazon is basically a queer identifying society.
Yep.
And even gave Wonder Woman a female lover before she left the island.
Correct.
And got that in continuity, which go Greg Rucka. But that's not going to be the case here because she's the only child. So I can't imagine. And all the Amazons seem to view her as their niece.
Yeah, or so their sister. Yeah, like the younger sister.
Think, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if that would necessarily be hinted at. But then we get to the boat conversation, and you're not quite sure how slides when she's talking to Steve about, oh, you didn't really need men.
Right, right. Well, I my wife was a big fan of that scene, and I was like, what are you trying to tell me right now?
So, yeah, so she's growing older on the island, and she has been training with Robin Wright in secret this entire time, and then Connie Nelson kind of walks in and finds them and is pissed because she knows that there's something about Diana that if it is unlocked, if her secret is unlocked, it gives Ares an opening to find the island and to wreak havoc again. So
also she can start like exploding people as we saw in that training scene.
Yeah,
like once
right,
it's unlocked.
Right. So they pull her back, and then Connie Nelson takes her. Oh, I guess she tells her as a little girl the story of Ares, mm-hmm. how Ares got pissed mm-hmm. because Zeus created man, and he kind of had a better love for man, and man has destroyed the earth. So Ares started to use his influence to quote unquote help man destroy itself, and then they can fix the earth and everything will be great. Zeus was having none of it, so Ares ends up, I guess they say that Ares kills all of them with the exception of Zeus, and Zeus hits him with a giant lightning bolt and sends him to earth and never to be heard from again until now, until today, I guess. Like, not today, but
then today.
You know, when you get that story in the beginning, Ares is going to be the final battle.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure.
It's a and also, like, it's a DC movie, so they have to fight a giant monster in the third act.
Yeah.
Like, I accept that mm-hmm. at this point.
It's the law
of yeah. comic book mm-hmm. movies.
I like how they handle the mythology a lot, and I guess that comes from that Azzarullo run, the mythology part of it.
I wouldn't say it really comes from the Azzarello run. I mean, I've been reading, there's a lot, if you read George Perez's run, there's a ton of mythology in there. And again, Gail Simone went back into the Amazon mythology there with Zeus and even brought in like Achilles.
Yeah.
But with the
so
clay.
So I think it's always present. Azzarello had a different take on it and a really cool visual take, but I would say it's, in all the best runs of Wonder Woman, the mythology has pretty much been present.
Always been there.
Yeah.
I like that story. I thought it was really neat how they told it, and it was just really cool setup for what we see later.
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, I will say there's a lot of Zack Snyder influence visually, and I think that...
Which is where his influence
right.
should be.
Yes. I agree. Like, that dude, we've said before, he needs to be a director of photography. Like, that's where his money is. That's his strong suit.
I will say something, though, is that I think we've played out the ramping up the action sequences, ramping up and slowing down the action sequences. And I'll tell you why. It's cool. And I know that they slow down like moments to be like, look how cool that is.
Yeah.
I think it undermines it.
Why?
I think it feels to make it less realistic and to, you know, is why. I don't think it works as well as when you see like the battle in the elevator with the Russo brothers
yeah.
and the way they handle action, which is like they never slow it down or do slow-mo shots or try to, you know, make it artistic. It's just it undermines the brutality of it. And I think, and it's not just Wonder Woman. I think every time we see that now, it's sort of like takes it out of, like, they're trying to be gritty and realistic, and yet they do these sort of like hero shots.
Sure.
With the slowed down action, and I think it undermines the action, and that's where I take issue with it. I think it's like it's their thing, and I know that that's sort of like their graphical style, but I think it steals away from what's happening.
I think it was cool with the bullets.
It's cool, but not
bullets were cool. My take on action sequences is I don't care a lot of times how visually stunning or bad they're done. If I'm not emotionally invested in the outcome of the fight, I'm going to find them boring, no matter how... like the scene in the elevator in Captain America is brilliant because you're worried Steve's got all these guys, and then he goes, you know,
he does the Captain America thing.
Yeah. And our eyes and our minds can keep up. Yeah, we could keep up visually. Like I don't know. I just don't like it being spoon-fed like that.
I think Karina hit the nail on the head, though. And this movie, what they did so well, which they have missed on the other DC movies in this extended universe, is that you care about the characters because of the way it's written. And so the action scenes, which I thought looked cool, I get it was a little weird with so much slowdown, speed up stuff. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, like, I cared about the outcome. And so that's the huge thing they did. And I think that's a testament to story by Zack Snyder, but written by... Who's the comic book guy? Jeff Johns, who is a brilliant writer.
Well, also, let's give Alan Heinberg.
Alan Heinberg, who also, I think, had a Wonder Woman run as well.
He did. It was a pretty good run, but it got kind of truncated.
Yeah.
So, but he also created Young Avengers.
Yes.
So
I will say this is the first of this crop of DC movies that doesn't feel like it was written by a committee.
Right.
I think it was Alan Heinberg and Jeff Johns working very closely together, and it worked.
Yeah, absolutely.
But not Zack Snyder.
But not Zack Snyder. Not Zack Snyder and not David Goyer.
Yeah. No, he has a lot of heart.
The way it's filmed, though, is very much the way a woman would film it.
How do you mean?
In certain situations. I had an article in the Barnes & Noble Sci-Fi blog. If you watch it, it's very much... When she goes to London, what you're basically seeing is the, you know, for lack of a better word, the patriarchy trying to get Diana to conform.
I see. Okay.
Do this. Yeah. Do this. Do it our way. Yeah.
Don't do that.
You don't understand. You don't know what you're doing. And Diana keeps going, no. But it's the way Gal Gadot plays that, those sequences. And I assume Jenkins had a lot to do with which take she used, which is just like, what?
Yeah.
And she's, you know, like, no, I don't have to listen to you. Kind of a look of sort of amused befuddlement on her face. That's
a great way to, and that's befuddlement.
That's what I was going to say. She's mystified. Like, they really walk the line of, in this movie, I think, of making a feminist statement without making a feminist statement. Yeah. Like, they don't make her mad.
Nope,
right?
No.
Which is what a certain element would expect.
They make her mad at the war.
Well, the animated movie makes her mad.
Okay, thank you for bringing that up, right? Like, this is the animated movie in real, quote-unquote, real life, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same beats, it's the same everything.
But the animated movie, there's just something that feels, I don't know. I felt off.
Steve is a jerk in the animated.
He is a jerk in the animated. But I mean, like, it's almost beat for beat the animated film.
Let's get to Steve, since I know she's pressed for time. Yeah. Like, I want to hit
the
major points.
So Diana grows. Okay. She grows up. Connie Nelson agrees to let Robin Wright train her, but she's like, you got to train her harder than anybody you've ever trained. And they're finally like, Diana, much like her comic book predecessor, is just she's destroying everybody. Like, she's very fast, she's very strong, and she accidentally unlocks something. We don't know what it is, but like, she hits her wristbands together and there's a giant explosion and knocks Robin right back, and she freaks out. So Diana runs to the top of this cliff, and as she's on the top of this cliff looking out over a beautifully shot cliff scene and the ocean and everything around
it's so gorgeous. The cinematography, the visual design, everything. I mean, I kind of wish they stayed on Themyscira longer just to look at it.
Well, it's also it's visually completely different than anything we've seen in the DC stuff. Everything in the DC stuff has been at night and raining.
That's it.
They haven't done anything else besides that. So to see sunlight and to see her skin have an actual color of skin, and the colors pop and everything, it looked incredible. So she sees this airplane fly through the force field, or the invisibility shield. And
which, by the way, I didn't really understand why it happened at that time until you guys just talked about the wrist together. Diana put the hole in the force field, which I didn't realize.
Oh, no, I think
realize.
He... Is that right? Because I think he just flies through it. I don't know.
Because all the boats can...
all those centuries, and all of a sudden Diana uses her god power and the...
And it weakened it a little bit. Yeah, I guess that's true. Okay, that makes sense. See, look, we didn't even know we said that.
We're accidentally smart.
So this plane...
It won't happen again.
Don't worry. It's a once-in-a-show thing. So the plane crashes through, and she sees it go down in the water. Another awesome scene where she jumps off the cliff, dives into the water... Steve can't get himself loose from the. So we see Chris Pine for the first time, and he's stuck in this German plane, and he can't get out. Diana swims down, snaps the plane almost in half, and pulls him out of the water. And again, like, she, this is a star-making role. Like, she, if she's going to be a massive star after this movie, and I think she is helped. I hate saying that, but she is helped by Chris Pine, because Chris Pine is so effing charming and witty that he helps elevate her. I don't want to say that she's naive,
no,
but like the way she sees the world is helped by Chris Pine, and he helps elevate that role for her.
They have good chemistry.
They have electric
chemistry. It's said that great actors around them make good actors better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a sense, since this is Gal Gadot's first really major role,
yeah,
that it certainly helped her to be working with basically all these great actors.
Yes.
Yeah, she is definitely, she's lifted up big time.
A huge impression, no matter how much screen time they have.
Right.
And I found the way that Gal Gadot portrayed this character just so perfect. Mm-hmm. I thought she nailed it. And she is naive, because she hasn't been in the world of men.
I don't want to say naive, because I don't think she's naive.
I think she's innocent.
Yeah, the innocence. Yeah. Okay. You know, like I said, the ice cream scene, or seeing a baby, and, you know. Yeah.
I think,
the baby scene was great.
I think the baby scene, it's one line. It's maybe 3 seconds in the whole movie. I think that might be the most important moment in the entire film.
Yes.
Because it says that for all of her strength and toughness and battle skills, that she's still a woman. She still has that maternal instinct, and that that's okay.
Yep.
Yeah. That doesn't undermine the other stuff.
I read it differently. Really? I read it as, I come from a place where I was the only child. And,
sure.
Oh my God, a baby.
I mean, I think that's absolutely an element of it as well, is the novelty of, like, I've never seen one, you know, but I think that, you know, she could have probably, you know, you could have just as easily done that with a puppy.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that I think it works on both levels. I think both things are true. But I really like the fact that it's like, it's not an either or. It's okay to have both. To have both of those aspects of your personality.
Right.
And it got a lot of laughs. That was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Because that's the other thing about this movie, is it's funny.
Yeah.
Like, there is enough levity in the movie when they hit you with someone with an emotional beat. It's earned.
And the humor is organic. It's not. They didn't write a bunch of one-liners and then figure out where to graft them onto the screenplay.
It's not the, I thought she was with you.
Right. It all comes from, it's all character-driven.
Yes.
And to Joe's point.
Well, yeah, even in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, it felt like some of the one-liners were trying too hard this time around.
You take it easy with your Guardians.
Yes. This is a sequence where you see, it could have been a really men bad.
Yes.
Bad.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And I'll tell you what, there was a trailer.
And it plays it not for, they're not laughing at Diana. They're laughing at the situations.
Yes. Right.
And they also are smart.
Sequence with the clothes trying on, and then she goes and they attack her, and we get the Chris Reeve Superman moment,
which was awesome.
The end sequence where Edda has the sword. I mean, that's just brilliant symbolism as far as feminism goes.
Yeah. I like also that the humor is dialed down the more precarious and the closer to war they get.
As we get closer and closer to the quote-unquote front line, the humor kind of starts to dissipate a little
bit. They were smart to not make Steve come off as some just giant mansplainer on everything.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, they didn't, you know, they were good to keep that character kind of balanced. And not,
because he can go the other way real easy,
real quick.
Yeah.
And I think that really, you have to give credit to Chris Pine.
The two sequences where you see them alone, the one where he's naked and then on the boat.
Yeah.
The sort of, without those two scenes.
Yeah.
I don't think the movie works.
Why do you think that?
Well, because what you see in the sequence where he's naked, and he's a little bit embarrassed, but, you know, and then he has a great line about being above average.
Yeah.
Because he's still a man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And she's never seen a man, so, you know.
Right. So, I'm curious. And I'm sure the Amazons run around naked.
Sure. Yeah.
To be honest. Good chunk of the time. Why wouldn't they? But she's genuinely curious about him. Mm-hmm. And he is both baffled and fascinated and... just
starstruck.
Doesn't know quite what to think of her, but he's he's interested in her without seeming like he's leering at her, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
I think you have to give Chris Pine a lot of credit, and Gal Gadot is the star of this movie, no doubt, and she's amazing, but I think Chris Pine, as the levity, the humor, she's playing off of Chris Pine. She's the straight man to Chris Pine.
Oh, absolutely.
And you gotta give him so much credit, because he makes this movie so much fun, but he also, like you said, all the things you've commented on, he does it in such a way, he portrays this character to where he doesn't have weird ulterior motives. He doesn't look at her as an object. He really believed that he cares about her, and
he's a partner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a true partner.
There's been a little bit of ire, I guess, about the relationship, that there is a relationship between Diana and Steve. It's tough for me because that's a relationship that is across comics, with the exception of the weird turn with Superman and Wonder Woman as a couple. That's the couple.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't mind, because like that, you know, like to me, that takes place in Kingdom Come, right? Like that's the that relationship is an Elseworlds relationship, and I like the idea of them together as older superheroes. Like obviously, Lois is going to die and Steve's going to die. These two warriors who are left alone, who are the last, who you assume are the only two people from their kind, would have some sort of connection. So the idea that they get together in Kingdom Come is fine. In continuity, not so much. It was not handled very well. But the Lois and Clark, Selina and Bruce, Steve and Diana. Like, those are your really,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Well,
I only wish that Lois, and they have Amy Adams.
I'm right there with you.
As well as Steve Trevor was written.
I agree.
Yeah. Because I don't think you get Superman right unless you get Lois right.
So Richard Donner said that.
Lois is as key to his story as Steve is to Diana.
Yeah, yeah. Richard Donner said, he's like, if you can't make the love story work, the movie doesn't work. Because and that was in 1978, right. Nobody's figured that out since then. So,
well, in the same way that this movie could have easily become like man bad, woman good, and she's angry and hateful, the Steve Trevor relationship could have easily been very reductive for her, or turned her into some moon eyed teenager that's boy crazy. That could have very easily been the direction that it went. And so I was very impressed with how the romance storyline played out, in that it never even approached that direction. At no point was I even worried of like, oh, are we gonna do that? Okay, no, they say
it's almost like it's like coworkers working closely together, and then something kind of happens.
Yeah,
like that's kind of the way But I mean, that's kind of what it is, though. Like they're on the front lines together. Mm-hmm. They have this. I think they had just liberated a town,
right?
So they were side by side. There's one of the best scenes of this movie. We'll just flash forward. So they get Steve to England, and they end up, they realize that the English, there's a treaty that's about, the World War One is about to end. Mm-hmm. And there is this, Danny Houston plays a German general, followed by Dr. Poison, which I was just like, of all the comic book names you can pick, like Dr. Poisonous is that's the most comic booky name I've ever heard.
It's a little on the nose.
It's a little on the nose.
Yeah.
For these movies that are supposed to be grounded in reality. They've created this gas, and that Steve knows, like, look, we've got this book. They're going to create this gas. We have to get there because they're going to launch it and we're going to lose this war. Nobody believes him. Diana, these are the great scenes with Diana where she's trying on the clothes and she's like, how do you fight in this?
Yeah.
And she's tearing dresses and she's trying to do like a super kick and a side kick and things like that, which was a great, like, the gal who plays Etta Candy, who was in, she was in the British Office. She played the Pam character in that. She was in Shaun of the Dead. She was Liz's best friend. So she's a British actress who's been in all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. She's just like, I don't know what to do with you. Like, you are on another level of woman that I have never seen before in my life.
But she likes it.
Yes, yes.
Like, she's just like, right on.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, absolutely.
That's why her showing up with the sword at the end of that fight.
Yes, yes.
Just so fabulous.
Hilarious.
Yeah, she, Etta Candy was also a character that was kind of Diana's Jimmy Olsen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she's not like, she keeps showing up random in all of the runs that I've read. She's either in the run or not at all, and then like they don't even mention her, and then all of a sudden she shows back up. So I was always confused as to like, has she been there from the get,
Well, she was there from the get. She was sort of some of the Molson in the original Molson comics. She's an original Molson, William Marsden Molson.
Character.
I mix up the two last names. Character.
Okay.
And she was basically Wonder Woman's best friend. If you read The Legend of Wonder Woman by Renee DeLiz,
I own the entire run.
She plays a really fun part in that as well.
Okay.
Which is fabulous. I can totally imagine the Eddie Candy in the movie playing the role in Legend of Wonder Woman.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree.
And then at there are versions where Wonder Woman's involved with somebody else, and Steve Trevor and Etta Candy get married. But I wouldn't say she's Jimmy Olsen so much as Wonder Woman's connection to regular women.
Okay.
Although Rucka kind of changed it a little bit and went with Barbara Minerva Cheetah as the main connection.
Yeah, that's
originally.
I have issues with that, Ron, but that's neither here nor there.
So I think we should talk about Steve's team. I really love the team that they put together. I thought the actors were great.
The Howling Commandos?
The Howling Commandos. Yeah, I know, like, right? That's kind of what they were.
And no, it totally was. I mean, I thought that Captain America had a great team, but I really liked the characters. I mean, I didn't expect to see Spud from Trainspotting in there. Like, I just thought it was great, and the other guys were awesome.
They fleshed those characters out a little bit more than the Howling Commandos.
Yeah.
I think they did. They're more like the losers, Sergeant Rocket.
That's good. That's very good.
But they fleshed them out, and I think they're important because they're really flawed guys.
Yeah, all of them are.
And,
yeah,
and sort of at the end, but she adores them.
Yes,
and she has compassion to them, and they really adore her. So I think it's really important. There's more than Steve in the movie, like.
Yeah.
Because he's sort of the ideal kind of dude.
Sure, sure.
Doing the best he can. And these guys are kind of all broken.
Yeah, you know what? You're hitting something that, I mean, it's sort of like her entire character is that she's attuned more empathetically. And we see that, like, with those characters, you know, where Steve understands it, but he's just sort of like, well, that's how, it's just the way it goes.
Just the way it is.
But she sees that. And even when we see them walking and she's wanting to help she sees the horses and she wants to help the horses. She sees the kid and the mother and she wants to, like, she's just a little more in touch than a lot of the,
you can also, I think
the other characters.
That's when you start to see her cracks. And what I mean by that is, like, she had this ideology where, like, I can help everybody. I can do, look at me, look what I can do. I can help everybody. And then she realizes as they're just in my training, there's one of those things where you have to learn, like, you got to keep, like, if you're in a certain situation, you just got to keep walking.
Yeah.
Because if you stop and help this person,
right,
five more people over here can die.
Sometimes in war, you have to make tough choices for the greater good.
Yeah.
And that's what Steve's saying is, like, we can't stop and help these two people.
Right.
Because if
5 million are going to die.
If it derails us from our mission, how many people are we going to lose?
Right.
And I thought it was, again, it didn't beat you over the head with it, but in its own way, it's a very anti-war film.
It's like, very anti-war.
Like, it not only with, especially for a PG-13 movie that has to be bloodless, it shows you some pretty graphic ramifications from war. You see people coming back without limbs, and the thousand yard stare, and back to the men and how you they're all broken, but they're all pretty much broken by war.
Yeah,
yes, you know, and it's war that's done that to him. And the one that really isn't broken by war is still kind of broken by society, in so much as that he's like, well, I want to be an actor, but because I'm not white, what am I going to play?
What am I going to do?
A whole lot of nothing or servants. And so I do this thing instead.
Yeah.
And
I make more money.
And then you see him playing a servant.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's the only way he's going to get undercover.
I love how the movie touched upon all these things, and Diana's character was so great. It did all this, but never felt preachy. And
that's such a testament
because this movie, as we've mentioned before, could have been such a preachy movie with such an agenda for many reasons, and it never felt that way, and I loved it. Never having to go, ugh, they're trying to shove this or that down your throat. It just isn't.
It was very matter of fact of, like, this is how it is.
With the Native American one, when he just touches that.
Well, it was a lot of showing. Like, look what they tried to do with Superman, Like,
yes.
He's the godlike being, and they tried to, and it never worked. Well, one, because I think Superman is really Clark Kent, dorky Kansas farm boy who's like, oh, I have powers.
This is what I'm saying. That's what I've been saying the entire time.
But instead of this sort of alienated godlike figure, and that's part of why it didn't work. But the other part of why it didn't work is that they just hit it so hard.
Yes.
I don't know.
I will let my father die because people won't understand. You know,
right.
I will, you know, go roam the earth with a beard. And
I don't even mind walking the earth like Cain and Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Like, if you're trying to connect with humanity and, you know, learn all of the different things, like, I get trying to find your way. There's a great book by Mark Waid and Lionel Yu where he doesn't...
Yes.
Yeah, Birthright, where he doesn't become super... Like, he goes to Africa and hangs out with, like, a civil rights leader.
Oh, Birthright. I thought he was attacking Planned Parenthood.
No! No! I don't think Superman would do that. But, like, he's able to connect.
Movie,
yeah.
They just show what she's like.
Yes.
They don't
right.
have anybody making speeches about.
Right.
She makes a speech about, I'm going to help them. But
yes.
It feels so genuine.
It does. The scene you're talking about, I think, is the best scene in the movie.
Monologuing or speechifying or anything.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah. There's a depth touch to this movie that we haven't seen, and it's not heavy handed, but it has more weight and more resonance than we've seen where they try to, you know, they literally beat you over the head with every scene to be some sort of metaphor for something
allegory
else.
Or
and
something.
This, yeah, and this, that's just like, no, that's
this
it.
Is the first DC movie to understand DC comics.
Yeah.
This is
yes.
like the reason I've always been more of a DC guy than a Marvel guy is because DC can tell stories like this. Marvel typically can't mm-hmm. or doesn't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that this is, I think, from a like what's a DC comic like? Mm-hmm. This is the most accurate representation ever filmed, even more so than Nolan's stuff, because I think Nolan's stuff was he took Batman and made a really good Nolan movie with it.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
was pretty close to DC.
It was.
Right. This
the
is
second
just,
one is.
This is just what a DC comic is like when it's working.
This right. is as close as anyone has ever gotten in the history of super movies to. And I think this is a better movie just because it's a much more complicated movie and they were able to update it with the special effects of the day. But the original Superman, which
yeah.
is. The tagline was, you will believe a man can fly.
Yep.
And the tagline with this. Is almost like you believe everyone can be a hero, you know.
Oh, that's pretty mm-hmm. good.
Which
yeah.
is the whole point of
you should
superheroes.
You should copyright that now so they don't steal it from you.
Well,
so but I have to run and go get the kids because I promised them Wonder Woman.
Absolutely,
do it.
Well, thank you very much for taking some time out of your day to discuss the movie with us.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank you, Corinna.
You know, since Karina had to cut out early, this is probably a good spot to put a pin in things. We're going to give you a two-parter because I feel like we're going to do a lot of talking on this one. As I like to say, there's a lot of meat on that bone. I don't even mean that in a dirty way. So, first time for everything. So, that's it for part one of Wonder Woman, and we will get part two to you shortly.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Your spirit never dies.